You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this lecture, it can be found at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider becoming a patron. This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Understanding Healing, Meditative Reflections on Deepening Medicine Through Spiritual Science. This is Collected Works, Volume 316. This is Lecture 13, the end of this series of lectures. There's some addenda to this, but this is the last official lecture. And this is, I will say, a cycle composed of a Christmas course and an Easter course put together for young doctors. Again, Lecture 13, given in Dornach on the 25th of April, 1924. My dear friends, today I would still like to tell you a number of things following on from the observations we've made, and then speak a little about the general subject to which your individual questions relate. I now want to say something which it was better to leave until we had obtained the kind of knowledge we have discussed in the last 2 days. Specifically, it is necessary to avoid putting general truths at the beginning of one's observations, and to move on to general truths only once one has gained some experience, because only in that way does the general acquire its true and real coloration. So, now, let us consider that the four components of human nature, the physical body, etheric body, astral body, and I, capital, each have their own special structure. The physical and etheric bodies have a structure in space and time. The astral body and I, a purely spiritual structure. We have to imagine a purely spiritual structure by telling ourselves a spiritual structure has no space or time. Space and time have gone. But I can create an image for myself of the spiritual structure and imagine it that way. That takes place in the imaginative consciousness. But you now have to remember that we are dealing with a physical and etheric structure on the one hand, which is completely separated from the spiritual and soul structure in the sleeping human being, and on the other hand with a certain spiritual and soul structure. You see, when we look at the sleeping human being, we have a pronounced physical and etheric structure in such sleeping human beings who have sent their I and astral body away. And we have, in turn, the soul and spiritual structure separately from the physical and etheric body. They are very different from one another. The physical and etheric structure is differentiated into the individual organs as an organism which has, we might say, brought about the individual organs as if from the center of life. The astral and I structure are much more driven from the outside to the inside, that is, arise more through invagination. So the important thing here is that space and time are left out through invagination. The key thing is that the two are fundamentally different from one another, the physical and etheric, and the spiritual and soul structure. Now, the spiritual and soul entity, the astral and I organization, is, if we use an expression which is not quite correct but illustrates the matter, engaged in the physical and etheric organization in human beings when they are in the physical world in a waking state. They penetrate one another to a certain degree. So in every physical organ which is warmed through and filled with light by its etheric body, and also filled with life in that the cosmos works through the etheric body, in each physical organ we do have the intervention of the I organization and astral organization in the human being when awake. Now simply consider the following. The I organization and astral organization force their own structure on a given organ or organ system. In other words, something that should have a physical and etheric structure receives a spiritual structure becomes an image of the astral and I organization. That is basically the universal cause of physical illness. Speaking in universal terms, the cause of physical illness is this, that a person's body becomes too spiritual in a given location or as a whole. That is why the proper dedicated observation of the sick human being is so immensely enlightening, as was observed particularly strongly in ancient times, for understanding the spiritual human being. Just remember, in ancient times when people felt quite differently about human nature from the way they do now, I therefore do not say the following to resurrect the desire in some way that we should return to such methods today, but in ancient times, when people had more robust views about the human being, this was also expressed through phenomena such as these. If it was deemed necessary for the salvation of people with heretical views, they were burned. They were burned, allegedly at least for their salvation, these heretics, so that they would be liberated from what would otherwise deliver them into terrible torments after their death. That was a kind of vision in earlier times, which then turned into brutality. People had more robust views about the human being, and as a result it could happen that a person whom we would consider to be healthy was given melissa in a specific preparation. If they were given melissa in a particular way, their consciousness was pervaded with a touch of dreaminess. They became more dreamy than they were otherwise before being given melissa, but as a result subtle imaginations lodged in their consciousness. If they were treated with hyoscyamus, for example, in a certain way, then they would develop a strong tendency for inspiration. The following was found, for example, through such investigations. It was found that if the solar plexus was stimulated with hyoscyamus, the solar plexus was pervaded with spirit. It was found that then the astral body and eye organization intervened strongly in the solar plexus. Or it was noticed that the whole blood supply to the cerebrum increased by a small degree, which had a very important effect, however, if the person was given melissa juice, because the eye organization intervenes strongly through the cerebral cortex. And so the whole human being was examined as to the way that he or she could become spiritual, and how the individual organs showed how they could become more spiritual. It is a preconception that we think with the head. That is not true at all. We think with the legs and the arms, and the head watches what happens in the arms and the legs and assimilates it in the images of the thoughts. It would never, I already told you about that in the Christmas course, get to know the law of the angle without walking. It would never become familiar with the mechanical laws of equilibrium if it did not learn about them through its own center of gravity, which it carries about in the subconscious. As soon as we get down to the astral body, which processes all these things in the subconscious, human beings appear incredibly wise, even if they sometimes are quite foolish in the physical world. Because all the things which develop as geometry through walking, through a feeling of self, for example, because all these things are, if I may be so paradoxical, known in the subconscious and are then looked at by the brain. Now, you see, if the spiritual and soul organization intervenes too strongly in the physical and etheric organization, physical illness arises. And in the past, the spirit was simply investigated through the physical organs, because all the things which we can refer to as being a gift from above are spiritual, are soul and spirit. But now we have to make a distinction with regard to what human beings received as a gift from above by purely spiritual means. That continued to be called a gift. But let us take an example, belladonna. It is usually the physical and etheric which are at work in plants, but in belladonna, cosmic astrality is coming in most powerfully from outside. and in all the instances in which the spiritual acts on plants or animals, either the astral or what corresponds to the eye organization in the cosmos, poisons are created in contrast to spiritual gifts. But they are certainly the correlate of the spiritual, because they are those things in the plants and animals which go beyond the plant-like and are cosmic and astral. When we introduce the astral through Hyoscyamus, we are simply introducing what lives in the warmth cover of the earth, with which the atmosphere ends, into the human solar plexus and also into the human diaphragm. But when we take Melissa, which is not an actual poison, then we get this slight spiritual effect which only comes to expression in a dazed feeling. We might say that in Melissa, the poison is in a nascent state. That leads you to the rule, physical illness is when the physical organism or its parts become too spiritualized. Now, something else can also happen. It can happen that while human beings are awake, the spiritual and soul structure of their astral body or eye organization enter a physical organ too strongly. But now, they do not impose their spiritual and soul structure on the physical organism through their strength, but on the contrary, have the physical structure imposed on them by the physical organism. So that when human beings are asleep, the astral and eye become copies of the physical and etheric body, so that human beings take the physical structure into their astral body and eye. You see, these two ways in which irregularities can occur in human beings are substantially different from one another, also in terms of what we observe. In an ill person, the diseased organ becomes remarkably spiritualized. It becomes brighter. It is visible as if the spiritual had caught hold of it from the outside, in, from the surface. For the occult gaze, an ill person appears transparent. I might say, long before there are any clear signs in the color of the skin and such like. And this transparency is penetrated by the soul and spiritual entity. In people in which the other is the case, that the soul and spiritual organization takes on the structure of the physical and etheric, it can be noticed by way of the soul and spiritual entity in the way that such people sleep. In that situation, they become a wraith, a light, breezy wraith of their physical body. They continue to resemble their physical body. They really do become a specter of their physical body. And the crude experiments conducted by spiritists in so-called manifestations are all based on this. What I say does happen in some hidden way, that the soul and spiritual entity is weakened in a medium. That is also obvious. Then in the dark room, it is also the case otherwise, the weakened astral body and the weakened eye can take on the forms of the organs to the point where they become visible in the dark room, so that although the manifestations are true, they are also nefarious. Now, all so-called mental illnesses are based on the spiritual and soul entity, the astral body and eye organization, taking on the physical and etheric structure. That is the basis for all so-called mental illness. So that you can say, physical illness is based on the spiritualization of the physical organism or its parts. Mental illness is based on the astral or eye organization or their parts taking physical or etheric form. That is a general truth, which provides exceptional guidance for human understanding. That is something which relates in turn to questions which some have asked with regard to the relationship between medicine and education. For we have all the degrees between these two extremes before us in the child's organism. In the one child, the astral and eye organization may have the greater tendency to spiritualize the physical body and etheric body. In another child, they may have the greater tendency to have their form specified by the physical and etheric, and there are all possible intermediate stages in between. This basic law is in turn reflected in the temperaments. If it is the case that the astral body and the eye organization have the very strong, intense tendency, not yet to the point of insanity, so that a person can still manage, but the intense tendency to take on forms from the physical or etheric body, then we are dealing with a melancholic temperament. In the instant in which the astral body and the eye organization have the tendency to impress their own structure strongly on the physical or etheric body, we are dealing with the choleric temperament. And the phlegmatic and sanguine temperaments lie in between. In the phlegmatic temperament, it is the case that the astral body and the eye organization do not have such an intense tendency, but to a certain extent have the tendency to assume the structure of the physical, and particularly the etheric body. In the sanguine temperament, it is the case that the vitality which lies in the etheric body is strongly influenced by the astral body. That is how it is also expressed in the temperaments. And we can see how what in radical cases can provide guidance for physicians, recognizing how in the waking person the soul and spiritual entity is engaged with the physical and etheric, is also the rule for the educator in its latent states, so that actually education and medicine are things which continue one into the other. The thing is, my dear friends, to seek as much as possible to reach imagination in looking at the human being. Now, I would still like to give you some points of reference, particularly with that in mind. You can picture for yourself, at least that knowledge is available to you, you can picture for yourself the form of the human being in the embryonic state. Today, people have obtained, as far as that is possible, a view of the embryonic state in the initial stages, and how it develops later on, and on that basis you can obtain a coherent picture of the human being in the embryonic state. You can further obtain a coherent picture of the human being during the childhood stage. You must try to visualize the first and the second picture as intensely as possible so that you really scan it with your thinking, so that it really appears to you as if you were scanning the embryo with your thinking, inwardly tracing its forms. Then you enlarge the embryo to this size, hand movement, simply in your thinking to the size which the child has, which you can look at, observe with equal intensity. And then you insert your mental image, the picture of the embryo, into the picture of the child by inwardly metamorphosing it. You will have some difficulties in your inner experience if you do it properly. You will have to tell yourself, quote, if I take the head of the embryo and enlarge it to the childhood stage, then it will become very large. I then have to compress it. I also have to inwardly crystallize and coagulate what is still watery fluid in the embryo, is strongly a part of the fluid human being, in order for that to become the brain of the embryo. Close quote. And then you will take the embryonic state of the limbs, will have to stretch and form them, will have to undertake an inward sculptural activity and insert the unshaped limbs of the embryo into the limbs of the child. It is an exceptionally interesting inner occupation to insert the embryo into childhood age in your inner perception. Then you can go further. Then you can take the child and the adult and do the same experiment with them. That becomes more difficult. The differences between the embryo and the child are very great. You will need to develop great inner activity if you do that. But if you now compare childhood with the adult state in the mature human being, then the differences are not so great. It becomes somewhat difficult to fit the one with the other. But if you manage to proceed in this way, then the imagination of the human etheric body truly is born in you. The imagination of the human etheric body is born relatively quickly. Take note. Push the early years, embryonic period, into childhood, and childhood into adolescence, you will see condensed human etheric existence behind bodily nature, the physical body in its structure. There you have a guiding rule, which you can use just as well as the others which I spoke about yesterday and in the first session. You just have to understand clearly with all of them that the acquisition of the imaginative consciousness requires effort. You cannot obtain it by magic, but have to acquire it through intensive work. Now, you can go even further. You can attempt to imagine an ancient person, an ancient sclerotic person. Ancient people are sclerotic to a certain degree. And if you develop the feeling that you are also scanning this ancient person, you will get the impression in that spiritual scan, penetrating the sclerosis, that the ancient person is actually hollow. So you do not get the impression that a sclerotic ancient person is denser, harder when you scan him or her, but on the contrary, that he or she is not harder at all, but actually sucks inward. As you scan that person spiritually, you get the same feeling as when you physically rub a wet finger over meerschaum, bracket, hydrated magnesium silicate or sapiolite, close bracket. You know, of course, that when you rub a wet finger over clay or sapiolite, you get that feeling of suction. This feeling of suction is what you get with regard to the ancient sclerotic person. You have to develop this sense of scanning, this experiential feeling with regard to your perception. That is not only the case when looking with the eye, EYE, but with every sense, including the life sense. So you now have the density of age, which sucks in when you understand this. Now you push, just as you pushed forward in the first case from the embryonic stage into childhood and then into the mature human being, so you now push backward. Imagine the mature human being, who does not yet suck in, but who stands strongly in the world, and push what you have scanned in the spirit into that human being. When you push the embryonic structure into the childhood structure, you undertake a spatial metamorphosis. Now, when it appears to you as if the ancient person is a hollowed-out being which is continuously sucking inward, you have to act as if that being were filled with strength when it is pushed backward into the mature period of life. We become the mature person by pushing it back. Whereas previously, when we are looked at bristling with strength, we perceive something of a slight paralysis. The ancient person, when pushed backward like this, grows strong in his or her bones again, and in the whole structure of his or her solid organism. This inner way of pushing one thing into another has to be observed to a greater extent. And then the mature age also has to be pushed back into youth. That is actually easy again. Imagine a person who already has a wrinkled face and let him fuse with a young, chubby person. That will create balance. If we can manage that, then we gain the impression as if waves were moving through the etheric body and it started to sound. That is how we get an impression of the astral in the human being. So you have a rule which guides you to rise to inspiration. See plate 16. Push the density of age into the period of human maturity, and the age of maturity into the life of youth. You will hear resound in cosmic sound human soul activity, that is the astral body, out of etheric life. You can see from what I have said that the instructions for meditation are not given as orders, but are based on insight. The person guided to meditation in the right way is not treated in the authoritarian way that used to be the case in the ancient East, where the education and development both of children and older people was based on quite different foundations from ours. So anyone who is recommended meditations by us is given them in such a way that they understand what they do with themselves. You see, in the East, children were instructed by their dada, That meant that the children were brought up and educated through the way that the person concerned lived. They did not learn more than they could copy from the Dada. Adults had their guru if they wanted to progress further. In that situation, they were dependent on their guru, whose only rule was, "This is how it is. Do it." That is the difference. What we have in our Western civilization is that an appeal is everywhere made to the freedom of the individual, that people know what they are doing. And we can understand how inspired understanding comes about when we have understood with our sound common sense how physical illness and mental illness work, and when we compare what I have told you today. Because all these things can be understood with sound common sense. If we go further in order to understand what to do in inner meditation, then we have come to the limits of what we can attain with sound common sense. Sound common sense can attain everything that comes from anthroposophy. At the point where those things start which can no longer be attained with sound common sense, then it has worked properly to its limits, and it is like standing at a lake. That is a similar kind of limit. One can continue to look from the edge of the lake. Sound common sense does, truly, take us to all these things. You must not fall prey to the slur that you are spreading a mystical, obscure world view, but one that can be attained with sound common sense. When I said that once in Berlin I was criticized in an article about the lecture which said, "Sound common sense cannot understand anything of the spiritual world, and anyone who understands anything about the spiritual world is sick, is not healthy," that was the argument used against me. Now I still want to say something about the fact that you are in a very special position as young people, because you are required through your medical studies to look deeply into the whole nature and essence of the human being. You see, we have to take very seriously that the Kali Yuga has come to an end, that we have entered an age of light, even if humanity still lives in darkness, because the old continues through inertia. Something bright is shining in from the spiritual cosmos. And as human beings, we are entering an age of light, and people only have to open themselves to receiving the intentions of the age of light. Now, young people are indeed predestined to grow into the age of light, and if these young people develop a certain self-awareness with a requisite seriousness as to why they are in the position of having been born precisely at the start of the age of light, then these young people will have the opportunity in various degrees to fit in with what is required by the developmental impulse of humanity. And that requires today that we look to the human being in all respects if we want to explain the world. Just as previously people looked to nature to assemble the human being out of the individual forces and processes of nature. We will gradually have to reach the stage of understanding the human being and comprehending the individual processes in nature as specializations, one-sided manifestations of what happens in the human being. If we manage that, a certain intimate relationship will take hold in all of human feeling and mind activity, which has been sought, but sought in a certain tumultuous way. Just think how young people started to idolize nature in a certain way when the youth movement of the Age of Light came along. It was abstract. However great the vitality with which it was felt, it was abstract. In contrast, the spiritual path of development of young people today must lead to deep feelings regarding their connection as human beings with the world. Deep feelings. And what they assimilate spiritually must no longer be science for the intellect. That leaves us cold. People have always been left cold by that. Science must develop in such a way that something really does occur, in the sense that with every stage we achieve in science, we also change as human beings, in our mind, in our feelings, that we become acquainted with something we have forgotten. After all, we did become acquainted with nature, for example, before we came down into the physical world. but it looked different then. Today, what young people went through in their previous existence is killed off when we refer them to crude, robust external perception. Once it occurs to people to treat external sensory perception as if an old acquaintance turned up in sensory perception whom we know from pre-earthly life, then feeling will enter knowledge. Feeling will enter cognition in all instances. And this must truly be like a bloodstream, like a spiritual bloodstream which flows through all of scientific life, through human education and teaching as such. This intimate relationship with what is real, that is what we have to obtain in science. In this respect, the modern age was truly overloaded with concepts. You see, I tried to show at a relatively early stage how human beings, when they see the external world of the senses, actually only have half of reality. How they can only obtain the whole of reality when they combine what arises in them and external sensory reality. And I had to start with that because the time was quite different then from today. Things are still in preparation. I had to set it out epistemologically. But if you read my work titled Truth and Knowledge, Readers Aside, also known as Truth and Science, and a Readers Aside, you will work toward letting the spiritual arise in the human mind, a spiritual which springs up from the inside. That is the first step toward such a deepening of science, particularly toward accepting cosmic reality in heart and mind. Now, that is something which is particularly possible for physicians, that they learn about such intimate experience of reality. And that is why physicians, just because they are physicians, will be the people capable of turning the abstractness of the rest of the youth movement, those who are not destined to be physicians, into a more concrete form with inwardness of heart and mind. After all, it is possible as young people who have medicine within them to deepen the medical, as we are doing here, with other people who, for example, only have jurisprudence within them and are poor fellows because they only have jurisprudence. With jurists it is quite impossible. Something of the spirit was still present in medicine until the early 18th century. In jurisprudence, the spiritual ceased as long ago as deep in the Middle Ages, and people no longer even have the slightest inkling of spirit, but only of statutory notices. It is quite possible for physicians, who are the first to enter concrete life, to have an exceptionally fruitful effect on other young people. That is why it would be a good thing if the individual groups which have emerged in the anthroposophical youth movement were to be supported by the physicians in particular. Of course, we have to take account of the existing karmic conditions. But we have the very hopeful Tübingen group, which is working with education, and which will be able to gain a great deal, for example, if it has a physician in it who can clarify things with regard to the medical side. Here we now have Dr. Bockholt leading the youth movement, even if only on an interim basis, and it will be a very good thing if the youth movement is fertilized by what develops inwardly in physicians. And so we can do extraordinarily much in individual instances. But on the other hand, it would also be good if you occasionally, when the possibility arises, were to concern yourself as much as possible with the educational work in the anthroposophical movement. If there is a serious approach, there is no obstacle to prevent you from concerning yourself with that, but in a serious way. What is presented in the seminars of the Waldorf School cannot be given to everyone. But when someone demonstrates that they are concerned seriously with the subject, there can be no obstacle to becoming familiar with the seminar courses of the Waldorf School when these things are also truly viewed from the medical side, and also inwardly penetrated with the thought of the close relationship between healing and education in antiquity. Just consider that today we have completely abandoned the view of the human being as an entity who enters earth life afflicted with sin, because the modern view no longer has any idea of what sin means. what has been consolidated into the concept of sin. What I demonstrated to you in these days as the law of heredity is based on sin, on original sin. And individual sin is also something that human beings have to overcome in the second half of their lives. They must properly overcome the sinful model which originates from heredity. We can also say from the sick model, in accordance with the old concepts. But if human beings kept as their body what is at work in the model up to the change of teeth, if they bore that for the whole of their life, they would be a person at 9 years of age whose skin would be covered in weeping eczema if the organization continued like that. They would get holes in their whole body, would look like a leper. The flesh would fall off their bones if they were able to bear it at all. Human beings are born sick into the world, and education means recognizing and guiding what works in accordance with the model, means the same as subtle healing. You should live in the youth movement with the awareness that when you describe education, you consider yourselves as therapists. You specify the medicines, which of course remain in the spiritual, but can have a strong physical effect depending on how much the child passes into the pathological. That is what you basically have in education, but only at a different level, on a different plane. Also, a healing art. And, on the other hand, if the patient does not want to help in any way, through what he can be given as guidance for his own subjective awareness of the illness, for pessimism or optimism regarding his view of life, if it is impossible to work educationally, it is incredibly difficult to support him in a way that brings healing. If the patient, I do not want to say that he should have a blind belief in the medicine, that would be an exaggeration, but if the patient is brought to the point simply through the individuality of the physician, that he experiences how the physician is permeated with the will to heal, there is a reflex in the patient, which is then permeated by the will to be healthy. This powerful coming together of the will to heal and the will to be healthy plays a tremendously great role in treatment, so that we can indeed say it contains an image of education, and education contains an image of healing. A great deal depends today on people finding one another in the world in the right state of mind. So if young people in medicine come together with the other young people in the right consciousness, then you will see that the young people in medicine can have an exceptionally fruitful effect on the others. But sharpening your awareness toward both sides in this way is a particular necessity. You see, these are the things I would like to place in your soul and your heart, now that you have been here once again in such a satisfactory way. I hope it has contributed again to strengthening and making closer the bonds between your souls and the Gertianum, and that you feel that particularly in such a concrete field as medicine, the Gertianum finds the people to carry out into the world what can be found here. You will develop a proper awareness of that if you also consider yourself as part of the Gertianum in your feelings and frequently direct your thoughts to what the Gertianum wants to achieve for the world and the development of our civilization. And so the bonds of the heart which you can tie with the Gertianum will be something which can help you in a profound way with the task you have set yourselves, specifically as physicians. It is with this feeling in mind that I particularly wanted to hold these more intimate discussions, as we have done in these sessions here. And I believe that we will be able to achieve a considerable amount if you continue with this feeling, which has permeated these discussions in particular, out into the world, now that we have had to hold the last session today. And in that way we will stay together in the nicest way. The Gertianum will be able to see itself as the center in the best possible way which has set itself a particular task. The Gertianum will thereby truly be the Gertianum, and you will be true Gertianists. Then you will simultaneously be the supporting pillars outside in the world which the Gertianum needs. And from this perspective, I appeal to your soul to become true and proper Gertianists, If we do it in that way, everything will turn out well. Push the early years into childhood, and childhood into adolescence. You will see condensed human etheric existence behind physical nature. Push the density of age into the period of human maturity, and the age of maturity into the life of youth. You will hear resound in cosmic sound human soul activity out of etheric life. The end of Lecture 13.